Hi, I'm Billy. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon and a little bit nervous, so I'm sure you all have been there or get it, because what did Owen say to me? No, Rich said to me, oh, you're all among friends. So anyway, I wanted to thank you, Owen, for doing this, and Janie for birthday chips, and all the people that work so hard to put this thing together and the recordings. Let's see. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself, where I came from, and my what things were like before I got into Al-Anon, and then the miracles that I received after being in Al-Anon. So let's see. So I was born in San Francisco in 57. I had three sisters, so there were four of us. My mother was my main qualifier, alcoholic. My father was not an alcoholic, but he dealt with my mother's alcoholism through violence. My mom drank every day. She was an everyday drinker. I don't know how much she drank, but I used to be told, go find your mother's bottle, and you could find a fifth. And when I was a teenager, I would find those fifths and I would take them and refill them with the cold coffee, depending what was in the fifth. So excuse me, I'm just a little bit nervous. I can remember when I was about 4 years old, when my mother would get drunk and she'd just irritate my father, and he'd tell her, knock it off, knock it off. And then eventually the violence would start. And when the violence would start, I can remember just hiding. And my mother would say to me when he was hitting her, don't worry, it doesn't hurt, I'm okay. So the message that I got was so screwed up, because here you are, you're very impressionable and you're seeing that there's bad things going on, but you're being told something totally different. And what that taught me was that I couldn't trust myself, and that what I was seeing was maybe not true. There was a lot of crazy stuff that went on in my house growing up. And those things formed a basis for how I saw myself and how I saw myself in the world. Another thing that I always felt was that anything could happen at any time. So be prepared. Never totally relax, never totally relax in any situation, not among friends, not going out, not doing anything. And it was very hard to trust people. I only felt safe with my dysfunctional family. And that might sound crazy, but those were the people I knew. When I was little, and my sisters would take me to Sunday school, and they would all go in the older kids' rooms, and they would have me go in the nursery room, I couldn't be left without a family member. I would cry hysterically, and one of my sisters would have to come sit with me. And I think it was just fear of what was going to happen to my mom. And that happened to me then. It happened to me in kindergarten. I did grow out of it, and I can be alone now. My mother passed away at 64 of cirrhosis of the liver, and she did stop drinking for about a year at one time, but then she started drinking again. And there was no Al-Anon in my family. My father didn't deal with it well. My father's sister, my aunt, also lived with us growing up, and she and my dad managed the bills, you know, went to work, did all of this stuff. My mother stayed home, took care of the kids. And also I had elderly aunts that lived with us, and my mother took care of them. And so as a kid, I used to think, oh, she chooses alcohol over me. You know, this is a choice she's making, and poor me. But as an adult, especially after doing my fourth step work, what I learned, or what I believe, choose to believe, is that my mother never chose to do that. And that in fact, she probably told herself every morning when she woke up, please don't let me drink today. Please let me be a better mother. Please let me do this. And that reality of it, but the world wasn't what I thought it was looking like. The reality is that she was sick and she had a disease. So I'm grateful to the program for showing me those types of things about how my view of things was so screwed up. And I'm sorry, you said something about when you said damn, and sometimes I have a mouth like a truck driver, so I'm gonna really try to keep it toned down. Okay, my three sisters, they grew up, we all grew up, we all got married, and we married either alcoholics or abusers. And it's the family disease. You grow up in it, you repeat the same things, you do what you know, even though you know it's bad and you know it's not safe. There's something about it that draws us in these directions. So my first marriage, and yes, there was more than one, I was 21. And I had four children, three boys and a girl, by the time I was 28. By the time I was 35, I was divorced. So I had four kids and me, and it was rough raising those kids by myself. And their father was not a great participant in raising the kids. I'll leave it at that. And he was also a daily pot smoker and a beer drinker, but that was thought of as just a normal thing at that time. It wasn't thought of as alcoholism or drug abuse. Everybody smoked pot and everybody drank beer. Well, I know that's not true today. My kids were very active. And as they got older, my three boys got into all kinds of trouble all the time. And there were some incidents. I was renting a house on Pleasant Hill Road at the time, and my sister said, hey, did you see the police log in the paper? Did you see the fruiting on Pleasant Hill Road? Somebody had been throwing oranges at passing cars. Well, I realized that was my children. And another time I was at work, in another house I was renting, there was a house between me and the main street. They got back there and they got water balloons, and they were throwing water balloons at passing cars. And when I got home, the police are driving up and down, and I went in the house and I realized what they'd done, and I came out and told the cops. I had to take my daughter to soccer. I was coaching her soccer team at the time. I'll be back, so meet me back here. And then they had, so anyway, those were just a few of the things in their younger days that made my life interesting and and crazy. But what I felt was, I felt like, oh my God, I can't do this. I'm a terrible mother. You know, on the outside, that looks like, oh, those boys. But on the inside, I took it as, I'm not doing a good job. I'm messing this up big time. And I need help. So it was always looking at, it was me, that there was something wrong with. Why can't I do this? Like, you see all these other good kids, you know, and every other parent knows how to do this. And why didn't I know how to do this? So raised the kids, and I got married again. And I refer to this marriage as the one that I don't count, because it was brief. It was bad, and I was divorced after 2 years. So we'll leave it at that. By 2004, still no Al-Anon here. By 2004, my youngest daughter was starting college. And I reconnected with an old friend that I had worked with, my husband of today. And in fact, I met him when my kids were little. I had too many to pay a babysitter, so I did family daycare. And that's when I also had Owen's kid in my daycare. And that was a long time before. And I had my husband's daughter in my daycare at that time too. So many years later, we reconnected, and there was something. We went to lunch and stuff, and we had been friends for years. And in fact, we worked together for 10 years. But there was something different in that hug. It wasn't like, oh, see you later, buddy. It was something had changed, and I knew something had changed. But I questioned it, like, huh? With Matt Taylor? I was like, I didn't understand it. But anyway, it was a good thing. And we got married, and he is the sweetest man in the world. And I am just so grateful. And he's right back there. And something else, you know, relationships that I had been in the past, my behavior was so messed up. I was always trying to be what I thought somebody else wanted me to be, say what I thought somebody else wanted me to say, do what I thought somebody else wanted me to do. I never did anything without like reading the room or thinking about it, because the people-pleasing side of me was so big. And for the first time in my life, I had somebody in my life who really cared about me, and I didn't know what the hell to do with that. But we got through a lot of stuff. Thank goodness I came into Al-Anon and was able to accept that. So in 2008, my eldest son, from the time he was a teenager, a lot of drinking. He was ADHD. I think it started as self-medication. He drank. He used drugs. Well, all the boys were drinking and using drugs at that time. But it didn't stop for him. And he continued to drink. And he continued to use drugs. And it was his drinking that brought me to my knees and brought me to Al-Anon. His drinking affected me. The things that I was doing was lying to the police. When he'd be in the house and they'd come to the door and say, he's not here. He is not here. And I thought that I could say just the right thing to him. You know, I must have some kind of magic power. If I just say this, he'll get it and he'll stop. If I just say this, he'll get it. And that did not work. There was nothing that I could do or say. And I was terrified, because in my world, people that I loved who were alcoholics, they got cirrhosis of the liver and they died. And when I was faced with that with my son, it was not something I just could not deal with that. So I came into the Al-Anon rooms. And the first meeting I went to was a Wednesday, I think 9:10 o'clock, Walnut Creek. I also then went to the Tuesday noon meeting in Lafayette, and that was a great meeting. And I went to the Thursday noon meeting in Concord, and the Saturday noon meeting in Walnut Creek. I was getting something. I don't know what it was, but I was getting something, and I just... that was the only place I could go where I felt any relief at all, was at these meetings. My MO would have been to talk myself out of things and say, I don't need this, and stop going. And so I took a service position in one of the meetings as literature coordinator, because one thing was for sure, that I couldn't disappoint anybody. If I said I was going to do something, I better do it, because God forbid anybody talk about me not doing something. So I started to do the literature in that meeting, and that kept me committed to that meeting long enough for me to keep going to Al-Anon and wanting to come back and feeling that help. I got a sponsor fairly early on, probably in my first year of the program. And this woman changed my life. And I That's not an exaggeration at all. What I got from working the steps with this person was definitely life-changing for me. So we did step one, admitted I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. Well, that wasn't a stretch because I had figured out that there was nothing I could do to stop my son's drinking. And then came step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore me to sanity. That one was a little bit of a stretch for me. I had a hard time. I had an extreme dislike and distrust of organized religion. I didn't want anything to do with it. Just, nope, not gonna happen. I did not understand the higher power thought that it doesn't have to be the God of the church or the God of the cross or the God of this or the God of that. It can be whatever you need it to be. And my sponsor helped me to understand that my higher power is not part of a corporation. And that I didn't say, oh, okay, now I have a higher power. It took time. It took time for me to figure that out. It took time for it to develop for me. But I had trust in her and I wanted what she had and I wanted relief from the pain I was in. And so we moved on to step three, made a decision. It sounded like such a final commitment to turn my will and my life over. Well, I decided I definitely didn't have a specific higher power, but I trusted that there was something. And by making the decision, really, I thought, well, I got to do this in order to get to that. So, and I did. A lot of the first part of those steps for me, I just had to take on faith. And what is faith? Faith is part of our program. I didn't see the connection then. I see the connection now. And then step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That for me was the life changer. Step four for me, we worked through a process of listing all my resentments from my earliest memory. And then after that, in step five, we went through them. And we went through this long laundry list of things. And I got to see who I was. I got to see that I wasn't the most honest person in the world. And I thought I was so honest. That was not true. I thought that, oh, you know, everybody's an a-hole except me. And it's, you know, they're the ones that are doing this to me. I was a victim. I was a great victim. I didn't know that either. I also learned that I had good qualities. I had such low self-esteem growing up, and I thought that I needed to know everything. If somebody asked me about something, I needed to know it. And I learned that I'm not stupid. That I don't have to know everything. There's things that I'm really, really good at. And there's things that I'm not really good at. And that's okay. But I didn't know that it was okay not to be good at things. And it reminds me of the four M's. This was me: managing, manipulation, mothering, and martyrdom. Fit me to a T. So in my step four, one thing that the best way that I can describe it would be that it was like my house had dirty windows and everything I saw was through what I wanted to see or through my sick Al-Anon mind. And after doing that fourth and fifth step with my sponsor, it was like somebody had come and washed all those windows, and I saw this beautiful world of possibility that I belonged in, that I wasn't stupid in, that I didn't have to fix everything in. And I used to think I never had a spiritual awakening, but I think that was a spiritual awakening. Another interesting thing is, you know, I've been in the program 15 years. I just thought, put that together. So continued, you know, continued growth, continued learning in the program. Let me see. So step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So I definitely had a list of defects because I found them. I also had a list of assets. So that was good. It kind of balanced everything out. I know that I've heard that people were scared to do the fourth and fifth step because, you know, they didn't want to see all of these defects. But there are so many positive things in Al-Anons that we don't even know. We don't even acknowledge. We think they don't count because we just see the negative. My seventh step, my sixth step, I made a list of, well, actually, I didn't have to make a list because it was on my fourth step inventory. So I took that and talked to my sponsor. Well, you know, how do I do this? What do I do? And so I just go someplace that you feel good and talk to your higher power. And so I drove out to the Martinez Marina because that's a really pretty spot. And I sat in my car and I felt foolish, very, very foolish. What am I doing here in my car with this list? And I'm talking to something. And but I did it. And this is the thing. I had to trust. A lot of it was just on trust. Just do the next right thing. You know, my sponsor suggested these things and I saw what she had and I wanted it. And up till then, I was feeling better. So I did it and I just, you know, basically prayed that for my higher power to take my defects of character away whenever it was time to do so. No burning bush, nothing ooh, happened. Drove home and that was that. But what I found is I was feeling better. And I was behaving differently. I was driving in traffic and not yelling and being angry. I was thinking, well, if there's traffic here, it's probably maybe there's an accident that I could have gotten into if I was speeding on by. So I'm probably right where I should have been. Now, never in a million years would I have behaved that way before, but So when I say that it cleared these windows, it just gave me a new way to look at the world. And for me, that was fantastic. And every day there was something. I was feeling a little bit better and looking at things a little bit differently. And my qualifier was still drinking and his life was out of control. And he had a fiance who had a three-year-old. And I was just so worried and trying to make things okay for him. So it took me a lot longer to get out of his way. What I learned in Al-Anon was that my interfering took away his dignity. My trying to fix all these things for him wasn't helpful. It was me saying that, yeah, I think you're pretty messed up. So let mom take care of this for you. Let mom do this. And I did that. I did that for quite a while. And the last thing that I was paying the phone bill, I was paying, doing this, doing that. He's 29 years old at this time. I think he was 29. Anyway, then it came time, I was still covering him on my insurance. And my sponsor said, that still counts. So you should think about that. And I thought, well, what if, you know, he gets in a wreck on his motorcycle? I have to keep him on my insurance. I have to do this. And I didn't have to do that. But that feeling, especially as a parent, of needing to take care of your children, that was really hard. But eventually, I let that go. And, you know, he eventually, not right away, got into AA. He had to go into rehab. He was a real mess. And as far as I know, he's sober today. But I don't ask because I don't want to know. But I'm pretty sure, you know, I would say that he is. He's married. He has another child, and his life is good. So I'm grateful for that. And I had nothing to do with it at all. I did drive him to rehab, but other than that, it was totally out of my hands. So step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends. That seems scary to me because the people that I resented generally were the people that I had harmed. And that, I didn't know that coming into the program, that would turn on me in that way, but it did. And so there were people that I thought, you know, that I'd been in relationship with, and, you know, everybody was an a-hole, I'll tell you, you know, if it didn't go my way. And so I made that list, and my sponsor told me to mark it. I think it was with 3 things. One's you're willing to make amends right now. Second column, you could think about making amends. And the third was, I'm never, ever going to make amends. And not so much because I didn't feel that I needed to, but because I didn't want to see these people. I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want anything to do that. I did not want to go back there. And so I made my amends to the ones that were fairly simple, not simple, but easier. And with the rest, I did not go searching anybody out. But what I did do was to tell my higher power, if you want me to make amends to this person, I know that you will put them in my path and you will give me the strength to do it. And damn if my higher power didn't do that. It was like, oh God. And I'm sitting in the, you know, parking lot in Pleasant Hill, pull up, do something, and I see this person and I went, oh God. Really? Really? You want me to do this right now? And I didn't know what I was gonna say or anything, but it worked out. It worked out. I made that amends. And this was somebody that if I'd have seen them in a crosswalk, I would have wanted to run them over. And I was able to, you know, I don't know if I was really able to forgive a lot of it, but I was able to understand that this was a sick person, you know, that this was a sick human being. And I can make other choices in my life. And I'm the one that put myself in the relationship. I'm the one that continually accepted unacceptable behavior. And in all of those things, it was me making choices to do these things and to accept these things. So that's how step 9 worked for me. And I think I probably got through my whole list. Some people that weren't here, I wrote letters that I wasn't able to send. My amends to my mom had passed long before. And, you know, that my mom's life was hard. She was one of 16 kids. She was born down in the Turlock area. Her dad was a raging alcoholic that was violent. And she just had a really hard childhood. I didn't know that. And so she was doing what she knew. She was doing the best that she could. And I know that she loved me. This alcoholic that drank this fifth a day and always had a burgie on the counter also put me in bed every night, got on her knees with me and said my prayers and scratched my back and said, do you want milk or water? And brought me a drink. So there's such a, you know, there's just two sides. And being able to, I was never able to tell her that I I got it, that I understood that it's okay. And so that amends to her was really important to me, to be able to understand who she was. And she did not have it easy. Besides us kids, she was running a bedpan back and forth to my old lady aunts that were living with us. She was stuck. She was stuck in that house. She couldn't go anywhere. So I get it. And she came from such an alcoholic background. In fact, my grandfather, I said, was an alcoholic. I did some family history, and I found that his father, he died in a VA hospital in LA of alcoholism. So it's just there. Step 10. I lost it here. We're going on. No, step 10. Continue to take personal and inventory. Is that step 10? And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So I do continue to take personal inventory, not in a written sense, but I know that if I've done something that I'm not comfortable with, I feel it. I feel it in my gut. If I've said something to somebody, whether it was jokingly or not, I know today that that wasn't right, because I'm just not comfortable until I put it right. And I use that. I don't do a lot of people. I have, you know, you go do a personal inventory, do an inventory every night, go through your day, see how you feel about things. If I feel rotten about something, then I look at it. And sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, as I understood him, praying only for the power, only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So what that told me was I couldn't pray to win the lottery. I couldn't, you know, I could, but my prayers are to do his will, to do the right thing, to always try to do the best that I can. I will pray for, you know, people's health and things like that, but I used to always pray for what I wanted and what I wanted my higher power to do for me. And what sometimes, if things are really messed up and I'm having a hard time, I'll just pray, please, you know, show me the right thing to do. Help me to figure it out. And I never figure it out right away. It always takes a while for that to happen. But another gift of the program was, for me, I learned to be able to say, to not have to answer right away when somebody asked me a question. I learned that I could say, I'll get back to you. Also, a really important thing in my communication with my husband, I had a really hard time saying what I needed or what I wanted. And he really cared. He really wanted to know. And so it was hard. And I had a really hard time talking about finance. I would get like physically nervous talking about finance. And somebody told me that, you know, it's okay to say, you know what, we need to table this. I'm feeling really anxious about this. Because when I would get to that point, my words wouldn't come out. I'd like know what to say right here, but I couldn't get the words out. And so I would just, you know, put the discussion on hold. And what I would do is go journal. And when I was journaling, the words that I was trying to say would come out. And so when we would speak again, I said, ha, 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 this is what I want to say. But it was, you know, it was practice. It was practice, and it took me a lot of years. And pretty good at it now. okay. Let's see. So step 12, having had a spiritual awakening, which we've decided that I had, as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So did I have a spiritual awakening? Yep, I definitely did. Do I carry the message? I do my best to carry the message. I have done service since I've been in the program. Service keeps me coming back. It keeps me accountable. One of the best services that I have ever done is sponsorship. Sponsoring people, there's nothing like it. The relationships that I have formed from sponsoring, it's amazing. It's like a sister. It's just the closest relationship that I can explain. I have friends that I went to grammar school with, high school, and we still see each other. We know everything about each other, but I don't have the closeness that I have with my sponsees that maybe I've known, you know, obviously less time than that. So sponsorship, it's not me giving something to somebody else. It's listening to somebody talk about what they're going through and me remembering that not long ago that was me, or it could be me again right now. So, and you don't need to take a class to be a sponsor. There's no requirement. Work the steps. Having had worked the steps is probably a good idea. But anybody can be a sponsor. And I see in meetings that it's hard for people to get sponsors. So that is really, if you're thinking about it, or even if you're not thinking about it, just try it. And another thing that I've done in sponsorship is I've said, okay, we'll give it a try. Try it for a couple of weeks. If you or I don't feel comfortable or don't feel that it's working, we stop. And so that kind of gave me an out. There have been times when maybe there's somebody that maybe you feel a little uncomfortable with or a little bit threatened by. And that doesn't mean that the person is threatening. It might be something about that person that brings something up in me that reminds me of something from my past. So I've done service. I've been a GR. I've been done service at the district level for many years. And currently I'm the immediate past DR, but I'm the secretary of my Thursday night, 7:30 Pleasant Hill in-person meeting. So I encourage you all to come. We're pretty small right now, but we would really like to see more people there. So practice these principles in all our affairs. That's what I try to do. And I don't do it perfect. God knows I don't do it perfect, but I do the best that I can, and I get another opportunity to do it differently every day. How are we doing, Owen? Good. Okay. So that's what I got. Thanks you all for being here.